Good evening. I'm Michael Carey, the moderator for this year's running programs. Thank you for joining us. Tonight and throughout this week, you will have a chance to meet and hear from the legislative candidates for seats throughout South Central Alaska. We invited all the candidates to participate. Those appearing on the programs are those who accepted our invitation. Candidates who are running unopposed will have an opportunity to speak to the voters directly. Joining me tonight are Dacia Eaton of KSK Radio and Kyle Hopkins of the Anchorage Daily News. Now let's meet the candidates for Senate District L. They are Democrat Jake Hale and Republican Kevin Meyer. Let's go to Jake Hale for your opening statement of 1 minute, sir.
Thank you. My name's Jake Hale. My wife and I moved to Alaska in 1999. We moved to Bethel, working for Alaska Commercial Company as store manager trainers. In that time, I lived in Nuiqsut on the North Slope, Togiak on the West Coast, Aniak, and eventually ended up here in Anchorage in 2003. I specialize in small business development in rural Alaska, and I work with independent stores and Native corporation stores throughout the state of Alaska. Reason I'm running for Senate is I want to take a more active role in our state government. Over the last 10 years, a lot of resources that are available to rural communities have diminished. Prices of food and goods have skyrocketed to where their households in rural Alaska are paying $600 for a barrel of heating fuel. These are communities where the average income is $27,000 a year. I have two wonderful kids, 11 and 12, Lily and Isaiah, who we adopted through the foster care system. And I'm hoping that by being a larger part of our state government, that I'll help to improve their future.
Okay, let's go to Kevin Meyer. One-minute statement.
Thank you, Mike, and thanks for having us. My name is Kevin Meyer, and I'm running for Senate District L. For those of you who don't know Senate District L, it's a new district. It basically starts on Downing Road on the north, it goes south to Huffman, and then everything pretty much east of the new Seward Highway all the way up to Hillside Drive. This is an area where my wife and I have lived for the past 30 years. We have two children who've also went to school there. I served on the Anchorage Assembly from this area for 8 years, and then in the State House for 8 years, and now currently in the State Senate for 4 years, where I was the majority leader as well as the education chairman. I think it's the education that I'm most proud about that we accomplished this last session. Both the emphasis put on VOTEC education and the performance scholarship program, where kids who don't want to go to college have the option of VOTEC, and then the kids who do want to go to college and who apply themselves can get a scholarship.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll go to the reporter's question. They'll be directed to you individually. The person who receives the question will have 45 seconds to respond, and the other candidate will have 30 seconds to comment on what he has heard. Let's go to Dacia Eaton with our first question from the reporters.
This is for Mr. Hale. You have a background in business, and you say in your statement that you want to make it easier for small businesses in Alaska if you go to Juneau. What exactly do you mean by that?
There are a huge amount of fees that small businesses end up paying when they're starting up. My partner and I just started our small business, and we were amazed at all the expenses that you don't know about until you're getting your business license, the US DOT information for your truck. It just all piles up. The upfront expenses for starting your own business probably inhibits people going into business for themselves. If we can find ways to reduce those costs, help promote small business creation, because small businesses can turn into medium business, hiring people, increase jobs throughout the state.
Kevin Meyer, 30 seconds.
To respond to that question?
Yeah, to what you heard.
Okay. I agree. We need to make Alaska a more business-friendly climate, more business-friendly place to do business and to start a new business and raise your family. But I think you also have to deal with the large business that we have in Alaska, because the large business then is going to spend the money that's going to help create the support small business. And that's where I think we need to focus on our oil taxes and making Alaska a good place to invest the billions of dollars that the large oil companies and large corporations will spend and that will help the small businesses.
Kyle Hopkins for Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Meyer, you work for one of those large businesses. You've made your career in the oil industry. Oil and gas companies are again lobbying for lower taxes. My question is, how do you drive a hard bargain with industry if they're the ones who pay your salary?
Well, that's a good question. As you know, we're citizen legislators, so we all work somewhere, and with the oil companies employing thousands of people throughout the state, it shouldn't be a surprise that one of us is in the legislature. And I've been in the legislature for a while, and I've always disclosed publicly where I work, and you're right, I've been there for some time. I think that I have shown the public, and that's why they have agreed to let me represent them down in Juneau, that I am fair, that I do try to strike a good deal for the people I represent, but at the same time, too, try to keep Alaska a good place to invest and to keep us competitive on a worldwide basis.
Mr. Hale, 30 seconds.
I have to agree. Alaska is unique in that we have a pretty much still the volunteer element that states had when our country just started. We do not have full-time politicians in Juneau. And everyone's going to have a job somewhere. Either you're a fisherman, and then people are going to accuse you of favoring fishing or oil. That's just the way Alaska is.
Daisha Eden for Mr. Meyer again.
This is a question about renewable energy projects. We just saw Fire Island power up, and I'm just wondering if you think there's hope for additional renewable energy projects in this region in the near future.
Excellent question, and yes, there's all sorts of hope for renewable energy projects. In fact, when I was in the legislature in the State House, co-chair of finance, we set up the Renewable Energy Fund, where $250 million is set aside for renewable energy projects. And we have two legislators, I think it's both of them are rural legislators, who serve on this AEA committee who decide which renewable energy projects make sense and we're going to go forward with and which ones we're not. Most of these are in rural Alaska, but as Jake mentioned, that's where we need the most help. And
real quick, what's the next project you imagine here?
In Anchorage?
In this region, South Central.
Well, I think currently we're working with the MEA and the landfill to capture some of that gas off the landfill. So I think that's the closest one to Anchorage.
Mr. Hale, 30 seconds.
Renewable energy is extremely important for Alaska, especially rural Alaska, but still here in the Anchorage area. In Kosciuszko, they put wind turbines up, and it cut their heating fuel costs by a third, and paying one third of what they did before the wind turbines. That could happen here in Anchorage or anywhere in the state. It takes a large upfront investment, though, to make it happen.
Let's go back to Kyle Hopkins for Mr. Hale.
Mr. Hale, the Alaska Federation of Natives just met in Anchorage. Once again, they voted for a resolution that called for a constitutional amendment that would call for hunting and fishing priority for Alaska Natives. Do you agree or disagree that Alaska Natives should get the first crack at hunting and fishing for food in Alaska?
I agree. Reason I agree is because the Alaska Natives, barrel gallon of milk is $20. Those sportsmen that hunt for their fun put meat on their table, but Alaska Natives do it to survive. Food is so expensive out there that they need to be able to hunt and fish to make it through the winter. And that's something I believe we should consider putting them out. They should have priority to hunting and fishing because they're hunting to survive, not hunting for sport.
Mr. Meyer.
Thank you. Yes, this was a big issue back in the 90s prior to when I was on the legislature. But I would agree with Jake that obviously those that have to have the food, that need the food, should have first priority at the resources.
Okay. Daisha Eaton for Mr. Meyer.
Did you have a follow-up question?
So just to be clear, you both think there should be a constitutional amendment? for Alaska Native priority?
I would support that.
I don't know if we need a constitutional amendment. I think we need to better manage our resources so that there's plenty for everyone. But if in times of a shortage, yes, definitely a rural preference.
Okay, thank you. Desh Eaton.
And this is a question for Mr. Meyer. You've already talked a little bit about your support for VOTEC. What have you done in Juneau to support VOTEC? Why? And what do you hope you can do if you go back?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I actually had it was my bill that passed that allows vo-technical coeducation now in middle school. It used to be just only in high school, so now we've expanded that to middle school. And also, what we've done is we've set up a separate fund for vo-technical coeducation. It used to be we thought, okay, if we raise the foundation formula, that some of that would go to vo-technical coeducation. What we're finding that it wasn't. So now, whenever we increase the foundation formula, a certain amount has to go into vo-technical education so that we're assured that a certain amount of money will go to that and to try to keep it strong and keep it viable.
And why do you think that's such a priority?
Well, because what we're finding is that 70% of only 70% of our kids are actually finishing high school.
Sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt you. Mr. Hale, 30 seconds.
I think it's a great program. Reason being is, as you said, that college... Not all the kids are going to go to college. Some are going to need trades. And that schools are teaching metallurgy or fishing or how to captain a ship. It's wood carving. All these things, carpentry, would helps prepare them for the future. Because they may not go to college and get a degree. They may go into a trade. Both are viable options for a kid's future.
Kyle Hopkins, you have the last question this round for Mr. Hale.
Mr. Hale, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like that at least as the beginning of this month, you'd raised no campaign donations in the Senate race. My question is, how do you expect people, how do you expect to convince people to vote for you if you can't convince people to donate to your campaign?
Well, I have not raised any. This is my first campaign, never ran before. And I'm wanting to know how the process works. I knew nothing when I came in. And I did a couple TV interviews and this debate. I go to school Constitution Day to speak to the students. And that's how I let people know who I am.
So is this just a trial run for future campaigns? Do you not expect to win?
Well, Kevin Meyer is very popular in our district. And the truth is, I'd be surprised if I did.
Mr. Meyer, 30 seconds.
Well, we have been raising money, and I'm sure you've checked on that, Kyle. Because in my mind, Jacob is a very viable candidate, and I take him very serious, and I have seen him at various public forums, and he's a very good statesman and spokesman. So we're running this campaign as if we would any campaign.
Okay, now we're going to the segment where the candidates ask one another questions. Mr. Hale, you'll have the first question. You'll have 45 seconds to respond, Mr. Meyer, and you'll have 15 seconds to comment on what you heard.
All right, my first question. There's been a big push to use public funds for private education. Where do you stand on that? How do you feel about taxpayer dollars going to religious schools?
Well, first of all, we can't do that. It's against our Constitution. We can't use public funds to go to private schools. It would require a constitutional amendment in order to do something like that.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You have 15 seconds to comment on what he said, if you wish.
Oh, no, that was a good answer.
Okay, Mr. Meyer, your first question.
Yes, Jake. Our budget for the year is currently based on $105 oil at about 563,000 barrels a day. And we know oil is declining 5% every year. So, the price can't keep going up to offset the decline. How do you, in your mind, how would you make up that gap?
Well, we have to watch our expenses. I think, and we may have to look at other sources of revenue. Mining development, the increased revenues from mining. Our taxes, we get all our money from oil. We get almost nothing from mining. Our taxes from mining is almost insignificant compared. We can increase there. But I think the primary thing is We have a luxury in this state where we have excess cash, and our spending kind of increased with that. This does not mean that we can go and find to cut corners, how we can lower expenses, how we can find ways to do things cheaper and more efficient.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, 15 seconds.
We definitely have to keep our spending in check, and I would propose that we start with our capital budget, whittle that down somewhat, and then at the same time adjust the oil taxes, which will mean we'll have less money coming in, but we're going to have more money coming from the future, because we know, we heard from ConocoPhillips, the largest producer, that if we make meaningful changes to the oil structure, that they will produce more.
Okay, Mr. Meyer, your second question.
Okay, Jake. Only about 70, we talked about this a little bit, only about 70% of our kids finish high school. What would you do to try to improve that number?
We need to invest more in our schools. I know I'm a firm believer in controlling expenses. I don't think expenses should be cut from our school system. A large percentage of those are from rural communities. I think more teachers, local teachers. I'd like to see state scholarships for rural people to go to school to become teachers so they can teach in their own communities. Get the communities more involved. They keep kids in school to finish school. It's pretty bad when so many kids aren't getting their basic education.
Mr. Meyer, 15 seconds on what you heard.
Okay. And we briefly talked about this. We have some programs in place now, the technical education for those kids who don't necessarily want to go to school, that hopefully will keep them interested in high school and not drop out. And then at the same time, those who do want to go on to college, we have this Performer Scholarship Program as well as the Honors Scholarship and other programs to help them.
Thank you. Mr. Hale, your second question.
Well, we've all heard about the $20 billion tax credit that the governor would like to give the oil companies. What assurances would we have that tax credit would encourage them to spend money to develop oil in the state? It's like, here, we're giving you the money,
okay,
but
you have to wrap up your question.
Right.
Mr. Meyer, 45 seconds.
Yeah, I think that's made for a good soundbite during this election process, the fact that we're giving away $2 billion to big oil. But the reality is we have on record, public record, from ConocoPhillips and BP, that if we make meaningful tax reform, that's what that $2 billion is, that they will produce more oil, and they listed the projects that become economical and that they will go forward with. Bottom line is, if they don't do that, then we would and could change the taxes back to where they currently are. But right now, we know we're not competitive, and we can't and shouldn't expect them to invest up here when they can make more money elsewhere.
Mr. Hale.
Well, I am not against giving them the tax credit. I just want in writing assurances that money would be invested in the state of Alaska.
Okay, Mr. Meyer, your third question in this segment.
Okay, Jake, in our district, infrastructure roads are very important. In your opinion, what is probably the most important road or infrastructure or roads that we need to focus on once we're elected and go back down to Juneau?
The roads that need to be the most work?
In our district, yeah.
The main roads are not bad. The side roads have had some serious issues. Potholes. My road alone had an issue with a water leak on it for 3 years before it finally got... It took someone damaging their car before the city put money in to fix it. Quicker responses to that. We need to, with the new streets off between Elmore and Dowling extends, that helped with some of the traffic flow. Expand a little bit on 68th, maybe.
Mr. Meyer, 15 seconds.
Well, roads and infrastructure has been my emphasis and priority ever since I've been in the legislature. And the state roads are the main roads, like mm-hmm. Dowling, Abbott,
yep.
And we've got Dowling done. Abbott has been resurfaced, and now O'Malley is the top priority in our district. And access to O'Malley off of Independence Park or off of H2A, there's the zoo, the golf course. We need to widen O'Malley as well as
there. Go back to Mr. Hale for his final question.
Okay, my final question is, you've been in legislation for a long time. Have you found that people accuse you of conflict of interest because you work for ConocoPhillips for so long? And does that affect your decision-making, being an employee of ConocoPhillips?
Well, I leave that up to the constituents to decide. Whenever we vote on an issue that has to do with oil and gas, you know, I always stand up and disclose that. What I have found is that when people agree with me, they go, well, he's got all this experience in the oil industry. He must know what he's talking about. If people don't agree with me, then they say, obviously, he must be biased. So I think that, you know, I do bring some expertise on this industry to the legislature that I think has been helpful. Obviously, we've got the highest oil taxes in the world, or one of the regions. Mm-hmm. You'd have to decide if I have a conflict or not.
Mr. Hale, 15 seconds.
Well, I can understand where you're coming from. My business deals with rural Alaska, so if I was elected, I'd probably have the same situation. I think it would be – it's a difficult place that candidates have in Alaska because we have jobs outside of legislation.
Let's return to our reporters and their questions, starting with Daisha Eaton for Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Meyer, we talked a little bit about fundraising already. How much money have you raised for this campaign, and who are your top three contributors?
You know, I really don't know what my total amount is because there's still some expenses out there. I'm going to say $50,000. The top three contributors, it's been across the board from the various PACs, some of them union, some of them from doctors and hospitals, and then, of course, individuals.
Okay. Mr. Hale, brief comment, 30 seconds.
The super PACs, since the Congress or the Supreme Court ruled, has really dominated the politics this year. Those who have the in or connections are going to have a big advantage on fundraising. I hope that it gets revisited.
Okay. Yeah. Kyle Hopkins for Mr. Hale.
Mr. Hale, in April this year, Anchorage residents voted in a mayoral election. They decided on a controversial gay rights proposal. Did you vote in that election? And if not, why not?
I did vote in that election.
How did you vote for mayor?
For mayor?
Mm-hmm.
I actually voted for Sullivan.
Okay. Mr.
Sullivan,
Mr. Meyer, comment here? You have 30 seconds?
I voted for Mayor Sullivan as well.
Okay. Daisha Eaton, back for Mr. Hale.
Mr. Hale, health care is very expensive in our state.
Yes, it is.
I've heard stories of people actually leaving the state and going down to the Pacific Northwest for care because it's so much cheaper, even with the plane ticket included. What can the state do to make health care more affordable and accessible here in Alaska?
That's a hard question. We're limited to two main hospitals here in Anchorage. Rural Alaska has hospitals in Bethel, Nome, and Kotzebue, but they're always flying people into town because they don't have the facilities to take care of it. Everything in Alaska is going to be more expensive. Getting supplies up here, the salaries that doctors and nurses get up here are going to be high. And that's going to give higher costs to provide the...
How can we make it cheaper?
Only thing that we can do is to have the state help supplement. That's an expense that the state may not be able to do.
We're going to go back to Mr. Mm-hmm. Meyer for 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think what you're referring to is called medical tourism, where the patient goes outside to get the procedure done, and the insurance company pays it because it's cheaper. You know, the patient doesn't want that, and we don't want that. The patient doesn't want to have to get on an airplane, go to Seattle, get the surgery done, then come back. And then it's not fair to our doctors up here who have to do the aftercare and take care of the patient because, frankly, there's not any money in the aftercare. It's in the surgery mm-hmm. itself.
Let's go to Kyle Hopkins for the final question in this round.
This question is for Mr. Meyer. Mr. Meyer, according to the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, you and three other legislators signed off on a 2010 report that favored transferring the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board from Public Safety to the Department of Commerce. Alaska is a state with an alcohol problem. My question is, who benefits from that change other than the liquor industry that lobbied for it?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, and frankly, there's a lot of different businesses that have a liquor license. Some have a beer and wine license, some have a full dispensary license, And what we were hearing from especially the beer and wine licensees is that, you know, we're a business, and we should be managed by commerce and not by public safety and the police. But you're right. We do have an alcohol problem in this state, and that's I've had several bills dealing with the ignition interlock and sexual assault by people, or I'm sorry, people buying for minors who are on the sex registry. So it is an issue, but we just felt like commerce was a better place for businesses.
Mr. Hale, 30 seconds.
I agree. Department of Commerce is where it belongs. Local communities, Bethel, ANIAC, wherever, they can legislate themselves if they allow alcohol or not in their village. Department of Commerce, selling alcohol is a business. It should be under the Department of Commerce.
Okay, now our final questions from the reporters. Each of you will have 30 seconds to respond to the same question. You'll both get the same question. Daisha Eaton.
This is for Mr. Meyer. How would you have voted on Governor Parnell's oil tax bill?
You're referring to House Bill 110.
Yes.
We would have made some changes to it in the Senate side, but I certainly agreed with a lot of parts of it. The progressivity, that is the problem, is that there is no high-end potential for the oil companies. So why invest here when prices do go up, you can make more money in Australia, Canada, or Law 48. So there are definitely parts of House Bill 110, the governor's bill, that I would have supported.
But you wouldn't have voted for it as is?
No.
Okay. Mr. Hale, 30 seconds.
I wouldn't have voted as is either. I want to see some guarantees from the oil company that money that they're getting from our PFD fund is going into Alaska infrastructure to increase development of oil.
Cal Hopkins.
This is the last question. Mr. Meyer, you mentioned, you talked about whittling the size of the capital budget. Can you name two projects that Alaska's spending money on, capital projects that they shouldn't be spending money on?
Yeah, there's $2 million in there for flying people in from rural Alaska to the Great Alaska Shootout. And certainly I want everybody to participate in the Great Alaska Shootout, but I'm not sure we should be subsidizing the airfare to do that. The other thing we do is that in times of surplus, we allow individual legislators a certain amount of money to help their districts. And some of those projects are questionable. I think the capital budget should be for the main roads, the infrastructure.
Mr. Hale, 30 seconds.
I would agree. Government shouldn't be paying for people to fly in for the Great American Shootout. There's enough money to be had by private enterprises that would donate money to make that happen. I used to work for Safeway, which is heavily involved in that. Alaska Commercial Company. There are companies that would make up that money just for the PR. It shouldn't be coming from Alaska taxes.
Let's go to our closing statement, starting 1 minute from Mr. Hale.
Well, this is my first campaign, and it's been quite the ride. I'm hoping to do it again. I think that our state government could do a lot more for Alaskans, especially in rural Alaska and those here in Anchorage. I think that we have far too much outside influence from the lower 48 and other companies that they pretty much try to buy up Alaska votes. They put in millions of dollars to influence our decisions because it best benefits them, not so much Alaskans. I like to see that change. I'd like to see more partisanship and more working across the aisles. Because when both sides stand their ground, nothing gets done.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, 1 minute closing statement.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank KAKM for hosting this and the reporters for taking time out of your busy day to be here. And I want to thank my new friends that I met in my new district going door to door. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about your concerns. And the one thing that I've heard loud and clear is that people are concerned about the economy. They're concerned about jobs, not only jobs for themselves, but jobs for their kids. And frankly, up here, jobs come from the oil industry, and the oil industry is an area that, or the oil tax is an area that is going to be top priority for me next session, and hopefully the legislature as well. It's difficult finding that sweet spot where we're getting the most that we can for the state, which is what we are supposed to do, but yet at the same time make Alaska attractive and competitive on a global, worldwide basis for the oil companies to take the risk and to spend the billions of dollars that's necessary to do business in Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Hale, Mr. Meyer. Next on Running, we'll hear from the House candidates in House District 23. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Lori Townsend with APRN News. Join us at 9 p.m. on November 6th for live election night coverage from the Dena'ina Convention Center in downtown Anchorage. The new districts in this year's election will bring interesting results as the votes are tallied. We'll talk with candidates as precinct numbers come in and with other reporters from across the state. So join us for live coverage November 6th from 9 to 11 p.m. right here on KSKA 91.1 FM.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.
Now let's meet the candidates for House District 23. They are Republican Bob Lynn and Democrat Lupe Mariquin. And we'll start with Mr. Lynn, your opening one-minute statement, please.
Thank you. My name is Bob Lynn, South Anchorage, new District 23. I've worked very hard to represent you honestly and effectively, and quite frankly, I think I've done a pretty good job. The coming election is very important, both nationally and right here in Anchorage in our State House District. I want to continue working to get more oil in the pipeline. I want to continue working to make Alaska more competitive every place we compete. More oil in the pipeline will bring us more jobs and the security that comes with good jobs. I have the experience to work across party lines to help make that happen. I want to help get a gas pipeline built, finally, built by somebody going someplace. We need energy from gas for economic development. We need the revenue from gas. We need the 15,000 construction jobs the pipeline will bring. Most importantly, we need affordable energy so people don't freeze to death in the dark. I want to continue helping make Alaska a safer place to live, work, and play. When we go to a store or go to school, we shouldn't have to fear for our lives. We have a lot of work to do, and with your help, I'll continue doing it.
We'll have to stop there, Mr. Lynn. That's a minute. Ms. Mariquin.
Hi, my name's Lupe Mariquin. I'm running in South Anchorage Hillside area. I've lived in Anchorage for 36 years, 15 years here in the Hillside area, so I know the neighborhood really well. I'm married, raised two children, and I have five great-grandchildren. 2009, I retired from a 30-year career. 24 of those years were in public finance, budget analysis, and management accounting. And then for 6 years, I ran municipal elections. So I spent my entire career taking care of the people's money and the people's precious right to vote. I would like to take those skills to Juneau because I'm concerned about the budget. The incumbent has passed every budget for the past 10 years. We're now up to $12.1 billion. It's unsustainable, and I would hope that you would vote for me so that I can help us take care of that future. For he's spending away our future, so I would like to work for you in Juneau. Thank you very much.
Let's go to the reporters' questions. Each candidate who's asked will have 45 seconds to respond, and the opponent will have 30 seconds to comment on the 45-second answer. Daisha Eden, first question for Mr. Lynn.
Mr. Lynn, in your statement to the voters, one thing that jumped out at me was that you say that you support parental rights. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think parents are the foundation of American civilization and world civilization, for that matter. And children, not the property of the government, Washington, D.C., or Juneau, children are cared for by their parents. That's what I mean by that. Parents should be the final word on anything that pertains to their children, assuming, you know, of course, that there's not abuse.
Ms. Mariquin.
I think in most families that I'm aware of, the parents and the children have a great relationship, and there's no need to have more government in there. There are only the instances where children are not being taken care of as you or I would take care of our children. They don't have the close family relationships. So I don't think it's a requirement that we should have government telling us that parents should be ruling their children. It's a family agreement.
Kyle Hopkins, first question.
This question is for Ms. Mariquin. In your opening statement, you said that that your opponent is spending away our future. Can you name three things that the state is spending money on that he's voted for that the state should not be spending money on?
Well, first of all, the entire budget, I can't be super specific, but the entire budget of $12.1 billion is unsustainable, especially with the declining production and revenues with our oil, which funds 93% of our state government. We definitely need to look at capital projects that offer immediate jobs, but they also offer long-term maintenance. Definitely we can trim the operating budget as well. My criteria for new items that come to the budget is it good for Alaskans? Is it sustainable? And number three, where are you going to get the money?
Mr. Lynn, 30 seconds.
Well, I agree. You know, we need to spend less and we need to save more. Unless we do that, we're going to be in big trouble, because whatever happens to the gas taxes, the oil taxes, we're going to have to be very careful how we spend our money. If we don't lower the tax on oil, we're going to suffer the consequences of less oil, less revenue coming in. And if we do nothing, same thing. So be careful with how we spend our money, as I have been.
Back to Daisha Eaton from Ms. Mariquin.
Ms. Mariquin, you were the election coordinator for the municipality of Anchorage for many years, and you left right before the big ballot debacle. What went wrong? And this is the second part is, what did you learn from working in the municipal offices that you'll bring to Juneau if you're elected?
I learned, it was a continuation of learning for me. All throughout my career, I've had 24 years of public finance. Auditors were my friends. I did a lot of outreach. And took care of the people's money. Through the voting election job, I loved making sure that there were more than enough ballots at the precincts. I think that was the big mistake that I saw happen in 2012 in that fiasco. For some reason, they chose to have less ballots at the precincts. That was a great big mistake, because you, as an election professional, want more people to show up that day. You want more people to come vote. You don't want less. So that was the big mistake.
Mr. Lynn, 30 seconds on what you've heard.
Well, I agree with Lupe. Frankly, I wish he was back in the election department working back down there instead of running against me, because you did a very good job. And, the election process is just the backbone of our nation. We had the greatest election process in the world with all of its faults. And I think she did a good job, and I congratulate her for it.
Kyle Hopkins for Mr. Lynn.
Mr. Lynn, you said in your opening statement that we need to get a gas line built by somebody. There's no shortage.
Going someplace.
Right. Yeah, there's no shortage of desire for a gas line. How should the legislature make a gas line happen?
Well, I don't think the legislature can itself make a gas pipeline happen. It has to be the people who produce the gas have to get together on this. The governor has kind of helped the major producers come together with some kind of alignment, and that's the first step. We hope to hear more on that, but we need to get off our backsides and do this up in the legislature that requires, that pushes the producers to do what they should be doing. We need that gas, as I said, and we need to get it now.
Ms. Mariquin, 30 seconds.
It's important to get gas in the pipeline, definitely. It's one of those issues. The word languish comes up for me. Mr. Lynn has been in office for 10 years, and we don't have a gas line yet. The important thing for us is to have more exploration. And we want to offer incentives for new companies to come in and explore and fill that gas pipeline.
Daisha Eaton for Ms. Mariquin.
Ms. Mariquin, we talked a little bit earlier about parental rights and just touched briefly on it. One question that I have is, should parents be able to use public money to put their kids into charter schools, private schools, parochial schools, or not?
I think that our schools are already suffering budgetary shortfalls. They have already canceled summer school in 2012, and then they're already laying off teachers. Right now, within the Anchorage School District, we have many choices. We have lots of different options. They don't have to go to the traditional school. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the voucher system is not a good idea. Parents who can afford it can go off and choose a private school if they like. But right now, within the Anchorage School District, we need that revenue, and public education is a commitment that we make to all of our children in our Constitution.
Mr. Lynn.
I wouldn't do anything to harm public school education. I have a son who teaches at South High. I have a daughter-in-law who teaches at Golden View. I have two kids in school here, two grandkids in school here. I'm a retired public school teacher. I've been in the classroom. I know what we need. And to get any kind of a voucher system, I'd rather call them portable scholarships. We're going to have to get an amendment to the Constitution. That's a very tough hurdle for the legislature to get through, and after that, the public would have to vote on another tough hurdle. But I'm not going to stand in the way of anybody casting their vote, especially for the future of their children.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Kyle Hopkins for Mr. Lynn.
Mr. Lynn, you were among the group that sued to stop the Troopergate investigation. My question is, are you still a fan of Sarah Palin?
I like Sarah Palin.
When was the last time you saw her?
Right after the vice presidential race, and I've not talked to her since.
So 4 years ago?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Ms. Mariquin, you wish to comment here?
I think Sarah Palin did some good things for Alaska. However, I'm not a fan.
Okay. Now we'll go to the candidate questions. You'll have opportunities to question one another. Mr. Lynn goes first. Ms. Mariquin, you'll have 45 seconds to respond, and then Mr. Lynn, you'll have 15 seconds to comment on what you hear. Your first question, Bob Lynn.
Thank you. Currently, someone with a visa that expires in 2 weeks can go down to the DMV and get an Alaska driver's license that doesn't expire for 5 years. I have a bill that would require someone's license to expire at the same time that their visa expires. I think that's common sense. Do you agree with that? And if you're in the legislature, would you sponsor or support such a bill?
I would have to look over the details of that bill. I'm not sure that I would support it or not support it, so I would need more details.
Mr. Lynn, 15 seconds.
Well, to me, it's just common sense that when your driver's license, it should be tied to the visa. When your visa expires, your driver's license should expire. If you don't have a legal right to drive down the street, if you don't have a legal right to be here, why should you be able to drive down the street?
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Ms. Mariquin.
Mine is about budget. You've mentioned many years in a row about a long-term fiscal plan and promoting a more sustainable budget, less spending, et cetera. Would you please tell me how that's going?
Well, not going as well as it should be going. We need to have a sustainable budget no matter what happens with it. All pipeline, and I've worked in the caucus, still working in the caucus. That's going to be one of our top priorities. I've talked to leadership, and we hope to get something better in the future than we had in the past.
Ms. Mariquin, 15 seconds to follow up.
Mr. Lynn, the primary reason I'm running is that you've voted in every single budget in the last 10 years you've been in office. We're up to $12.1 billion right now. This is an unsustainable budget. We're giving away, you are spending away the futures of our children, and I think that has to stop.
Ms. Mariquin, your second question for Mr. Lynn.
Mr. Lynn, so you also mentioned in your promises to Alaska, Anchorage, you need appropriate funding for K-12 schools and universities. Would you please tell me what that means?
It means enough to get our kids to school, have teachers to teach them, to get the books we need, the classrooms we need. I have one of my sons, I said, teaches at South High, and because of the situation going on there, he's had to go part-time this year, even though he has tenure. And so it means getting the money we need to help our kids in school. I think that's critical.
Ms. Mariquin, 15 seconds.
Mr. Lynn's plan is to starve funding for public education by supporting a bill similar to HB 145 to remove revenue from Anchorage School District. In his early in his campaign, he received donations from NEA, $2,000, and yet he voted with the Alaska Family Council questionnaire to support the voucher system, which removes revenue.
We'll have to leave it there. Mr. Lynn, your second question.
Well, first of all, I was endorsed by NEA, so I think that's unbelievable. You failed to put yourself on the record, your Alaska Family Council guide, and you also failed to put yourself on the record survey sponsored by the State Chamber of Commerce and Resource Development Groups. Every time you vote in the legislature, you're on the record. Why didn't you go on the record of the Family Council and the Chamber of Commerce?
I didn't go on the record because I didn't feel that my answers would be helpful to them. I really don't have a response for that. I just didn't feel it was important for me to respond to those questionnaires.
Mr. Lynn, 15 seconds.
Well, it may not have been important to respond to them, but I think it was necessary for the voters to know where you stand on these issues.
Ms. Merrickman.
You've mentioned seniority and experience many times throughout this campaign, and could you tell me how that's served our district?
Well, I think the fact that I've been reelected every time in the last 10 years tells me that people like what I've been doing down there, and they trust me and they respect my judgment on it. And part of that comes by having some experience in the process, being able to work across party lines. I've had such a good background and experience. A lot of my information I get is from constituents. I listen to people.
Ms. Merrickman, 15 seconds.
You might not know this, but our district has some of the highest voter turnout in the city, 40% to 50%. We need dynamic and excellent work coming out of our representative's office, and I know that you are not busy in Juneau. I know that you don't know Alaskan economics, and I don't think you're doing a good job.
Mr. Lynn, final question.
You failed to get the endorsement of the National Rifle Association, NRA, 2 years ago, and you failed again this year. You likewise failed to get the endorsement of the NEA, Alaska Education Association, either this year or 2 years ago. Can you explain why? There must be a reason.
Well, actually, 2 years ago, I got an A from the NRA because I am a gun owner. I support the Second Amendment or gun rights, and I, anyway, the other thing, NEA can't endorse me because you are an incumbent and they already have a relationship with you. They don't dare not endorse you. However, this year, I think that their minds might change after you voted in the Alaska Family Council or Alaska Family Action questionnaire about the school voucher system. That's a direct vote against public education.
Mr. Lynn, 15 seconds.
Well, I think endorsements are more important because it tells people where groups that support you stand. And I'm very happy with the NEA endorsement and very happy with the NRA endorsement.
Let's go back to our reporters. Daisha Eaton for Ms. Merrickman.
Let's turn to health care. It's very expensive here in Alaska. People are actually leaving the state to get health care. Insurance companies are flying them out to get procedures that are just too expensive here. What can the state do to make healthcare more affordable and accessible here in Alaska?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure what the answer is. I do know that our usual and customary and reasonable charges are higher. We don't fit into the mold of the lower 48, but my very in-depth experience with the Medicare and Medicaid as a budget analyst with the Medicaid Rate Commission and with helping seniors through the Medicare process during one of my jobs with Health and Social Services, and my relationship with insurance companies and medical care providers will help me to help find a way to reduce medical costs in Alaska.
Mr. Lynn, 30 seconds.
I think one of the ways we can reduce health care costs is to do something about certificate of need. Right now, if those of us around the table want to go into business to open some kind of medical care facility, we have to go hat in hand to the administration and say, please, may I do this? Do we really need to have this? I don't think that works. It should not be called certificate of need. It should be called certificate of monopoly. And competition works both in producing oil and producing good health care.
Kyle Hopkins for Mr. Lynn.
Mr. Lin, the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention just wrapped up here in Anchorage. Once again, they passed a resolution that said that the Constitution, the state Constitution, should be amended to allow for a priority for Alaska Natives for subsistence hunting and fishing. So my question is, do you agree or disagree that Alaska Natives should get the first crack at hunting and fishing for food in Alaska?
We are all American citizens. We're all Alaska citizens. And I think everybody has a right to hunt and fish where everybody else hunts and fish. I don't think anybody is better than anybody else.
So you disagree?
If that's what they think, yes.
Ms. Merriquin.
I also am a hunter-fisher person. I was raised that way. I don't personally hunt. But I think that there's something to be said for the way of life that Alaska Natives feel that they need to continue. And if they are subsisting, it's okay. However, we also have to protect the rights of hunters. And I know I enjoy having my husband bring meat to the table and fish. So, I support it. And I think that hunters should also be allowed to harvest.
So you agree that there should be a constitutional amendment for Alaska Native?
You know, I don't know that it's a constitution. No, I don't.
Okay, for the moment, we'll have to stop there. Desha Eaton for Mr. Lin.
Mr. Lin, each week right now, soldiers are coming home to Alaska, and some suffer from PTSD, and others are disabled. A number of them take their own lives, unfortunately. What, if anything, should the state be doing to support returning vets that it's not?
Well, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I'm a retired Air Force. We need to support our military. That means taking care of them after they've risked their lives on the battlefield. We need to do anything we possibly can to help these people. We have to make sure that they get the health care they need. Some of that's federal. The state can help also. And I just can't imagine not trying to help our veterans.
Ms. Merriquin, 30 seconds.
My family has deep military roots. My father served 83 missions in Korea, and my brother died in Vietnam. His name is on the Vietnam Memorial. I care deeply about our military, and we need to make sure that they get jobs when they come back and all the services we can provide to them to get them back into society.
Okay, let's go back to Kyle Hopkins for the last question in this round.
This is for Ms. Merriquin, and I'll follow up on the first question I asked you. In the meantime, you've said a couple more times that your opponent is spending too much money or supports too much state spending. Please be specific. Where would you make spending cuts?
First of all, I would go to any cut. I'm not sure I want to cut the budget right now. I think that we should not increase the budget and let things fall out by attrition. We have bought into a lot of capital projects that, like I said earlier, at first they bring jobs, their capital money, and then afterwards they fall into the operating expenses of maintenance. We have to figure that out. So long term, anything that comes to the table should first be good for Alaskans, be sustainable, and number three, where are you going to get the money? You have to bring that.
Mr. Lin, 30 seconds.
Well, we need to cut the budget. One way to do that would be to move the legislature from Juneau up to Anchorage, where the center of activity is. You can't imagine the amount of money that's spent to move us back and forth. Everybody, but I think it's three people in Juneau, have to come to Juneau from outside. It costs a lot of money, a lot of time. People's files are on the ship, and we need to be working with them. It doesn't make any sense. That would save a lot of money.
Okay, thank you. Now we go to our segment where we have the reporters asking both candidates the same question. Each candidate has 30 seconds to respond. And reporters, if one of you could gin up a third question here to go with the two we have. Let's start with Desha Eaton.
This is for Ms. Merriquin. What's your view of House Bill 110, the governor's oil tax bill?
I disagree with HB 110. My opponent voted for it. It's a $2 billion giveaway of Alaska's revenue for no return. That's the thing, no return. If it had some qualifications going with it, some incentive, some performance, I might look at that. However, just giving a blank check or giving a check for $2 billion is not a good idea.
Bob Lin, 30 seconds.
Well, you fail to take into account the fact we might get some more oil out of that bill similar to HB 110, which I think we need desperately. And I'd like to know, quite frankly, if we don't lower the taxes, what is your solution to getting more oil in the pipeline? I haven't heard that.
We'll have to make that rhetorical for the moment. Let's go back to Kyle Hopkins.
Well, I think I'll follow up. We've heard Mr. Lynn say that he favors a capital move. Ms. Mary Quinn, maybe if you could address that and if you could explain.
Okay. Capital move. It sounds like a great idea. It's come before the voters a couple of times already, and it's a great idea, but it costs a lot of money. I am willing to look at that again. I think that it's wonderful to have accessible government. It's great to have them right there with your constituents while you're doing business. So I would support looking at it again, but the cost is important.
Okay, Mr. Lynn, 30 seconds.
That's the object, is to save money, and I might say that I'm the only legislator, as far as I know, that's ever gotten a capital move bill out of a committee. And I did that, and I co-sponsored, and I voted for it. Unfortunately, it died in another committee, so it never made it to the House floor for a vote. But that's one way to save money among many.
Deshaun, one more question here, or Kyle Hopkins, want to get a question?
Real quick, will you push for that if you go back to Juneau?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's talk about domestic violence and sexual assault. Huge problem in our state. They've tried to do a lot to curb it down in Juneau. What else can they do? Do you have any new ideas? We'll start with you, Ms. Mariquin.
It's a very serious issue. It's one of those scores that Alaska is rating too high in. Domestic violence, it has roots. It goes back generations, and I keep thinking that each generation gets a little better. So I think that more intervention, and more education to teach people how they're supposed to deal with conflict. That's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And then when it happens, it perpetuates it with the next generation. So education.
Mr. Lynn, 30 seconds.
Well, for once, I agree with Lupe. And I voted for everything I possibly can to help rectify this horrible situation.
Okay, let's go to our closing statement, starting with Mr. Lynn. 1 minute, sir.
Thank you. Like I said before, the upcoming election is very important. There's no perfect candidate on the ballot for District 23 or any other district. I think you've seen that during this debate. I published Bob Lynn's contract with Alaska. It's in the official election pamphlet you got in your mail. I've also put out an 8-page tabloid. It's a copy of it in there. And please look it over. I mean every word of it. You can put that contract to work with your vote. Thank you for listening to us tonight. We both appreciate it. I respectfully request the honor of your vote for Bob Lynn. If there are any questions, please call me at my home, 346-4447. Thank you and good night.
Ms. Mariquin, 1 minute closing statement.
Only 1 minute. Thank you for listening tonight. I've lived here for 37 years. I care about Alaska. We have had Mr. Lynn in office for 10 years, and he has not kept his promise to take care of our fiscal responsibility. $12.1 billion, think about it. It's just getting larger. I would really like to take my experience to Juneau, 24 years of public finance, and I would like to get to work for you so that we have a future in Alaska. My name is Lupe Mariquin. I would greatly appreciate the honor of your vote.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn, Ms. Mariquin. Next on Running, we'll hear from the House Democratic candidate in House District 24. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Annie Feit. I'm a producer and reporter at Alaska Public Radio Network. On election night, November 6th, I'm one of the rare people in our newsroom who will be at home trying to get a good night's sleep. That's because my job is to come in early on November 7th to make sure we have all the latest news for you that morning. So tune in to KSKA Anchorage on Tuesday night for APRN's special election night coverage and the morning of November 7th for more results.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.
Now let's meet the Democratic candidate running in House District 24, Patty Higgins. We invited the Republican candidate, Charisse Millette, but she declined to participate. Ms. Higgins, your 1 minute opening statement, please.
Thank you, Michael, and thank all of you for watching tonight. I'm Patty Higgins, and I'm running for State House in District 24, the Abbott Loop area. When we first started remodeling our house over 20 years ago, our district was very different. It was much larger. We now run from Abbott to Dowling Road and from the Seward Highway all the way up to Service. We weren't a state when I first arrived in Alaska. I actually voted for statehood in a Quonset hut at Fort Richardson in Mrs. Joan Hughes's kindergarten classroom. Life was always exciting as the daughter of an Army helicopter pilot. We moved dozens of times before I was 18, but I always knew Alaska was my home. When Patrick and I went to dinner for our 36th wedding anniversary, we talked about how our three children grew up at a very exciting time in Alaska for public school. There was an explosion of choices. It is our hope that when our grandsons start kindergarten in a few years, there will be an equal renaissance in education.
Okay, I'm going to have to wrap it up there. Now we'll go to our reporter questions. They'll go back and forth with you, and you'll have 45 seconds to respond to the individual reporter's questions. Okay. Daisha Eaton, your first question, please.
Ms. Higgins, as we stated earlier, your opponent is not here. What separates you from your opponent?
Well, I think that's a good starting point. I show up for things. I enjoy the debate and dialogue. But I was appalled at the lack of representation. My opponent was not part of the majority for the last 2 years. She walked out of her caucus, and we were basically not represented. And our school suffered. Our roads did pretty good. But we need to have somebody who's there working for us day in and day out, and I didn't see that happening.
Kyle Hopkins, first question.
Ms. Higgins, during the most recent reporting period, APOC reporting period, at least five labor unions each donated a maximum contribution of $1,000 to your campaign. What will you owe those unions once time to for the state to negotiate contracts with workers?
Well, I think the unions will have the same ear and voice that everybody else will have with me. I think everybody deserves to have a fair hearing. I'm a realtor, so I'm used to working with buyers and sellers and working for a win-win in a situation. My opponent has also received union money, probably almost as much. So I don't think there's a problem there.
Daisha Eaton.
Ms. Higgins, you say in your statement to the voters that you want a fiscal plan. Please explain what you mean and be specific.
Okay. I think that Alaskans should have a five-year budget. And I think it would be tweaked every year as we go along, but we need to have a long-range plan. Years ago, I read Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And you know, you do your one-year goal and your five-year goal and your 10-year goal. And every day you wake up and say, what am I doing to achieve my goals? If we don't have a fiscal plan, we don't have a goal.
Kyle Hopkins, let's return to you.
In your voter pamphlet profile, your election pamphlet profile, you say voters deserve an honest representative who lives in their community. What are you really trying to say with that statement?
Well, my opponent has not been showing up for things. There was a period of time where we weren't sure if she even still lived in the district, if maybe she would be moving somewhere else. But her focus was not on us. We lost 10 teachers at Service High School. We lost three teachers at Windler. We lost one teacher at Trailside. The list goes on and on. When I was a Montessori PTA president and then got on the school board, there were a lot of schools that needed renovation, and I, of course, was advocating at the beginning for Denali, which is one of the oldest schools in our district. Service High at the time was asking for an auditorium, and we still don't have an equal-size auditorium as every other high school in the district. So we need people that are in there working for this.
Okay, we need to stop there on that question. Daisha Eaton.
Well, you were just talking about education and how the schools in your district have lost some teachers, and I know I read that you were speaking out about renovation not being done, et cetera. How far into the future do you think the schools should be funded?
Well, I think just 1 year forward funding. I think it's a horrible waste of resources and morale and talent for teachers to get pink slips towards the end of the school year. It's very distracting for them. even when the legislature says, oh, you know, we're going to get you the money, trust us, the school district can't do that. They have to budget their staffing accordingly, and they should be forward funded. It doesn't cost any more money.
Kyle Hopkins, your next question.
What's your view of the idea of to follow up on education, what's your view of the idea of amending the Constitution to allow the state to hand public money to private schools, including faith-based private schools?
Mm-hmm. I believe in school choice, and I believe in the Anchorage School District. We enjoy an enormous number of choices, but I do believe in the separation of church and state. If parents have an idea for a school, they can come forward, and it can be a charter school, it can be an optional program. We have a lot of choices in the Anchorage School District, and we have a very strong school system, and we have very high scores.
Daisha Eaton, your next question, please.
Let's talk about a little bit about where some of that money could come from and where it does come from. What's your view of the governor's oil tax bill, House Bill 110?
Well, I think he's not operating in the best interests of Alaskans. A $2 billion a year giveaway is unconscionable, in my opinion. I would be willing to look at the progressivity at the upper ends of the cost of a barrel of oil, but they told us years ago, if you share in the pain at the lower end, we'll be generous in the upper end. It's our oil, and it's our job to negotiate with them with a strong stand. And I think we are doing very well under ACES.
Back to Kyle Hopkins.
Do you think some kind of tax break is necessary in order to kind of win a pipeline project?
The pipeline project is going to be very complicated. So I am very supportive of doing whatever we need to do that works for everybody. It's a balance, but yeah, we'll probably have to do tax incentives. There's a challenge in the oil industry if they want to develop gas versus oil. We need to separate those two items, I think. That's one problem.
Ms. Higgins, health care is very, very expensive here, and we've even heard about people being flown by the insurance companies down to the lower 48 for care because it's so expensive here. What can the state do to make health care in Alaska more affordable and accessible?
Well, for one thing, I think the governor could set up the health care exchanges, and we should have more than just two insurance companies in the state. That would help drive down costs. We have a shortage of nurses, and there's a 2 to 3 year wait list at the university to get into the nursing program. I don't think we pay the nursing instructors enough. They can make a lot more on the floor. Well, you should have the best and brightest that are teaching nurses to be nurses. So there's a lot of problems there.
Once more, Kyle Hopkins.
Over the weekend, we had the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention once again. They passed a resolution that said that the state constitution ought to be amended to provide for an Alaska Native hunting and fishing priority, a subsistence priority. Do you agree or disagree that there should be a priority for Alaska Natives when it comes to hunting and fishing for food?
I think that there should be a priority for anyone who's living in rural areas to subsistence hunt. And I think it's appalling that we have given away our state rights to the feds, and they're the ones that now govern subsistence.
So you would favor an amendment that would call for, not necessarily an Alaska Native, but a rural subsistence priority?
I would.
Daisha Eaton.
So you talked a little bit about your job as a realtor. You know how expensive it can be to buy a house in Anchorage. Also, renting is very pricey, and part of that is because there's a 2.6% vacancy rate last time I checked. What would you do from Juneau to try to make affordable housing available to working people in Anchorage?
Well, that's a very hard problem because it's supply and demand. And in fact, in many cases, you're far better off if you can get in to buy a house because the rent is a lot more expensive. So what could we do about it? AHFC is doing some things. They've got some projects. Other entities have, like, the project planned at Spinard and Arctic. But we do have to look at affordable housing.
Okay.
In the Abbott Loop area, I don't know.
Kyle Hopkins and reporters, a little warning here. We have time for a couple more questions. So dig in your bag after, Kyle, you ask this next question.
Okay. Ms. Higgins, you're a Democrat running in a red state, and not just a Democrat, but, you know, you've been the party chair in the past. Many conservatives believe that the party is committed to big government or obstructing industry. What's your message to those red state voters? How do you win those people over?
Well, I think by giving them pragmatic answers. In the first place, I don't necessarily agree that we're a red state. We came in as a Democratic state, and most Alaskans are independents. More than 50% of us don't belong to any party. So as I go door to door, people ask me questions, and that's a really good sign. People are being a lot more thoughtful. They're putting a lot more thought into who they're voting for and why. I've had numerous people tell me that they are no longer going to vote for somebody just because there's an R next to their name. And I think that the oil tax giveaway has worked against them, and people don't like that.
Daisha Eaton.
Ms. Higgins, people who run for the legislature tell us endlessly that they're going to support small businesses. And then when they get down there, we're not really sure what happens there. How would you support small businesses if you go down to Juneau?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the biggest thing in my small business that I need is affordable health care. I'm in partnership with my daughter, so I am doubly motivated to provide health insurance for her. And we both have spouses that have health insurance. But if we didn't, the health care is unaffordable. $15,000 a month per person is crazy. So that's one thing. Making sure that license fees don't go through the ceiling with no cause and effect. The price for a realtor license was going to jump up to like $900 from $300 for no reason. So things like that, you have to be constantly vigilant. Are we doing what we can to promote small business? But providing the infrastructure that government, the businesses need to thrive would help.
We'll have to leave it there while Kyle Hopkins goes to the last question.
Let's talk about crime for the last question. Do you have any kind of policy proposals in your pocket that you would take down to Juneau that would be meant to reduce crime in your district?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I did a police ride-along a couple of weeks ago, and it was fascinating. I wish I had done that when I was 20 years old. I would so be a police officer. And for all of us out there, please watch in your rearview mirror. Nobody ever gets over. I mean, these policemen are like on somebody's tail, like inches away, and they're just driving along. So be more vigilant, please. For crime, I don't think that we meet the staffing levels. But what I see is our police are acting as social workers, and our prisons are where we're putting a lot of the mentally ill. So I would work on educating people about those issues. And when people have their first psychotic outbreak, they need treatment quickly before more brain damage is done. Because several of the emergency responses we did were guys threatening his girlfriend with a machete. He was having a psychotic breakdown.
Now we'll turn to Patty Higgins for her one-minute closing statement, please. Ms. Higgins.
All right, thank you. I'm Patty Higgins. I decided to run for State House because we need honest representatives who put down roots and are faithful to our community. When I met my husband, Patrick, back in ninth grade, he had no idea he would soon be skiing down mountains and panning for gold. I believe in responsible resource development, and I agree with Wally Hickel that Alaska is an owner state. We own our land and our resources, and we should get our fair share for it. Before running for this office, I served on the Anchorage School Board. One of my top priorities has always been fully funding education, because if we don't have an educated workforce, it won't matter what resources are developed because jobs won't be going to Alaskans. Our children need to be educated and to be ready to take the reins of Alaska. If I'm elected, I will represent the district and nobody else. I've never been afraid to stand up and ask the hard questions and demand real answers. A vote for Patty Higgins is a vote for you in Juneau. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Higgins. Next on Running, we will hear from the candidates from Senate District M. Stay with us.
Join KSKA on election night, Tuesday, November 6th. NPR coverage continues at 7 p.m. and statewide coverage from the Alaska Public Radio Network begins at 9 p.m. You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage. Now here's Annie Feit to tell you about the ballot propositions.
They haven't received as much attention as the statewide and legislative races, but there are two ballot propositions Alaskans will vote on November 6th. One is a bond package that would allow the state to borrow nearly $500 million for transportation and infrastructure projects. The other asks Alaskans to decide whether the state should hold a convention to amend or revise the Constitution. The state constitution requires that the question appear on the ballot every 10 years. The question is simply, shall there be a constitutional convention? One of the original convention delegates plans to vote no. Vic Fisher spent the winter of 1955 and 56 hammering out the details of the state's constitution with 54 other delegates. He thinks there are some parts of the constitution that could use revising, but he says Alaskans are too divided these days to make changes that will stand the test of time. He says it was very different half a century ago.
Alaskans were unified in favor of statehood, and the Constitution was written before we were becoming a state. You did not have lobbyists. You did not have special interests pushing in this direction and that direction, trying to get their specific babies into the Constitution as you would have today.
But another elder statesman of Alaska politics has a different point of view. Former Attorney General John Havelock has written a book, Let's Get It Right, arguing it's time for the state to hold another constitutional convention. He thinks the state's constitution is an excellent piece of work, but he has a long list of changes he says should be made to make the document more relevant, including protecting the permanent fund, making the legislature unicameral, and fixing the initiative process. He doesn't agree with the argument that special interests would sway the process.
There's always contention in politics, but we live in a democracy and we should let the people have a say-so on some of these essential issues that have been effectively neglected by the legislature. So I just don't think that some of these awful things that people suggest are going to happen are going to happen.
Alaska Federation of Native Convention delegates recently approved a resolution urging members to vote for a new constitutional convention to establish subsistence priority for Alaska Natives. The constitutional convention question has appeared on the ballot four times previously. It has been voted down by large margins every time, except the first time it appeared in 1970. That year, the referendum was approved by a few hundred votes. But on that ballot, the question was poorly worded. A judge ordered a new vote, and Alaskans then turned it down. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.